Blog Talk Radio
presents a Blog Radio Show.
Welcome to Applause Radio Show. I'm Joanne Barton. Tonight, we've got a great show for you tonight. We've got Bill Kinnison on, and he is, he's a lot of things in his own right. I mean, my God, he's an actor, producer, preacher, and he's done a lot of things himself, but he's also the brother of comedian Sam Kinnison. And my God, I didn't know a lot about Sam. I was hoping I'm going to find out a lot tonight. So at the time of his highlight, part of my chair, I'm trying to get comfortable, folks. When Sam was on top, I was doing things myself. I was in the music scene and I was out, you know, performing and everything. I wasn't much on watching too much TV at the time. So I kind of like missed his heyday, but I had seen him a few times, not in person, you know, on TV or maybe on Saturday Night Live or something like that. But I didn't know a lot about Sam that I'm going to find out tonight. So I'm waiting for Bill to give the call. Call him, we'll get on the phone. So here he is. I think this is him now. Hang on one moment, guys. Let's see if we got Bill. Hey, Bill, is that you?
Yes, it is.
Hi, everybody. This is Bill Kinnison. Bill, welcome to the show, everybody. Hi, Bill.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Happy
you
to be
actually
here.
You actually sound a little bit like Sam, your speaking voice.
Yeah, I used to do a lot of his radio and print interviews.
Really? I see. Now, it's funny, before you came on, I was saying that I really wasn't a huge, I don't want to say fan, but I was busy doing other things during the time when Sam was, you know, on top, you know. In
well,
major
okay, well, it was good talking to you.
Oh, stop. Come on, stop. God, oh, I'm so interested and fascinated in finding out more because I, you know, I had seen him a few times, like on SNL and maybe Johnny Carson and stuff. But I mean, I really didn't follow him, you know, but I knew he was great. Don't get me wrong. I just didn't know a lot about him. I didn't know he was actually a preacher. And so are you.
Yeah, he did it for seven years. And I did it for a lot longer. But yeah, we were a preacher's kids. So, I mean, we were raised in the business. We had two other brothers, and all four of us at one time preached.
So what made him choose the route of being a comedian then? I mean, basically, I mean, do you think that his style of his comedy was somewhat of an evangelist yet comedic?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah. The reason that he ended up going into comedy is that we were Pentecostal preachers.
Right.
And Sam caught his wife in an affair, and they got a divorce, and that's like the worst thing that can happen to you if you're a Pentecostal preacher.
Mm.
They used to say if you can't take care of your own house, you're not fit for the house of the Lord. And so when he got the divorce, that was the end. And he came up. I was pastoring a large church in Illinois, and he came over and was just devastated, and as low as I'd seen him.
Wow.
And told me what happened, and he knew that it was over, And he also told me, he said, I've preached for 7 years. I've never made as much as $5,000 in any 1 year. And so I told him, I said, Sam, I want you to take a little time and look down in your heart. Forget your brothers or preachers, your dad, your friends. Forget all that. Look down in your heart and find out what you've always wanted to do. Well, he took about 3 seconds, said, I always want to be a stand-up comedian. And so I said, well, then never preach again. Set a date. And after that date, you're never going to preach again. And that's what he did.
And you were his manager, too. And so I guess you kind of like put preaching on the side, too, at the time.
The start, I was still preaching. And then when we did the first HBO special and it came up that I was the producer on it, I didn't have to worry about leaving the ministry. They all pretty they all pretty much left me.
Oh God!
And that, and so, what I thought was friends and everything else. I had every single preacher I knew that blacklisted me, and surprisingly, it didn't really upset me any because I thought, well, they weren't my friends anyhow. And Sam hit about 6 weeks after I started managing in L.A., but it wasn't up to – that wasn't because of me. That was really because of Rodney Dangerfield.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So we managed him until he got killed.
Well, why did they blacklist you? What was the reason behind that? Because you chose to help Sam with his style of comedy or no?
Oh,
what got you blacklisted?
Probably the content of Sam's comedy.
Yeah.
And you have to understand, preachers are like comedians. They're the most insecure, jealous people you're ever going to run into.
Really?
I mean, yeah, the reason they're up there and they're flamboyant and stuff is because of how insecure they are. And so for someone to get out of the ministry, so to speak, and be successful, that eats them up with jealousy because a lot of them would like to do anything but preach, but that's, you know, what they've done for so long, they can't do anything else. And right. I'll have to admit, when I was younger, I had a couple friends, a man and his wife, that were very good friends, and they got out of the ministry and then was extremely successful in real estate. And I resented that because I thought, man, why, you know, here I am trying to do what God wants me to do and live the life, and they get out, and they're living better than I am. So I understood it. I understood how they felt. And
tables were turned. Yeah, you felt it. Yeah.
Yeah, and so when it turned on me, it didn't bother me. Sam was more bothered than I was because he felt like he took me out of the ministry, and that wasn't true at all. I was actually taking a shower, getting ready for a Sunday services at our church. We had about the largest Pentecostal church in Rockford, Illinois. And there was just something in my heart said, it's time for you to do something else. And so I remember on the way to church, I thought, well, I better tell the wife. And Rockford happened to be her hometown. And like I said, we had a great church, and I thought, this isn't going to go well at all. And so on the way to church, I told her, this is going to be my last service as a pastor. I said, we'll be here for if we figure out what we want to do, but I'm not going to pastor anymore. And
how did your family take it when both you and Sam, I mean, Sam, you know, he had no choice to leave, but you did have a choice. So how'd they take it when you followed Sam and left the church?
My family really, they weren't upset when Sam got out, except until they, you know, saw his act. And then they weren't too excited about that. And then Sam had been basically just a loser his entire life until he got into comedy. And I think part of the motivation for me getting out of the ministry and managing was to take care of him.
Right.
And so I think they appreciated that. I never really felt the conflict with them. And they would still, I would still come back when they needed me to and preach in their church. And But Sam never did. After me, once he got out, he never preached anywhere. He was done.
Now, when he was preaching, did he put any of his musical talent to his sermons? I mean, because he really could sing. He was a talented musician. I mean, I don't get it. I don't know why his music career didn't go bigger than it did, I guess is what I'm getting at. But I'm curious to know if he sang a lot in church. Did he put his performances musically?
Yeah, all four of us. Yeah, we were raised in the church. We lived in the church. We grew up there. And my mother was a fantastic piano player and singer, so she made us practice singing. It seemed like every day. I'm sure it wasn't, but looking back, it seemed like it. And Sam taught himself how to play the piano, how to play the guitar, how to play the bass, and all that. And he sung in services just like we all did.
Right.
That was just part of our MO.
And I remember when Wild Thing came out, I couldn't believe all the top 80s artists were all in that video. I couldn't believe it. How did he get them all in the video? I guess you had a lot to do with that since you were managing him. You probably pulled a lot of strings to get that to happen.
No, actually we didn't have to. The Rockers, and Sam became known as the, the rock comedian and
Oh, yeah, definitely.
The Rockers wanted to hang out with Sam.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever we did a project, all we had to do was say, we're going to do Wild Thing or Under My Thumb or something. And they all, for free, just wanted to be part of it because they loved hanging out with Sam. And Sam was a partier, and he would party with them and everything else. But it really wasn't Sam hanging out with them. It was them hanging out with Sam.
How funny is that, right?
So, Wild Thing was, that was interesting.
Any idea what Jessica Hahn's up to these days?
I have no idea. I haven't talked to Jessica in probably, I would say at least 25 years, maybe 20 years. But I think she married one of the producers on Married with Children, and then he died. And so I don't know what she is doing or has done or anything else. She just kind of drifted away.
Yeah, yeah. And I actually, what made me want to have you on the show was I was online and I saw the Wild Thing video came up and I'm like, oh my God, I had forgotten all about that. And everybody looks so young. My God, they all look like, I can't believe how young they all look in the video. It's crazy. Everybody's so attractive and handsome and oh my God, just good times, brought back good times to me. And I said, I forgot all about this. My God, I really had. And I was just surprised that his music career didn't focus more on his music career because he was very good. I mean, was his intentions to do that or no idea?
He would rather have been a rocker.
Right.
But, being raised and then preaching on stage and then from the first time he ever got on stage in Houston, Texas, he was a natural. But to him, what he wanted to do was end up doing movies and have a TV show and different things like that. And so stand-up was his vehicle to get there.
Yeah,
he pretty much
did accomplish everything that he wanted to do.
We just got to the place that we wanted to be when he got killed.
Right. I had read at the time or heard at the time that he had some movie offers at the time when he passed.
I just signed a 3-movie deal with New Line Cinema while he's on his honeymoon. And we also signed his own TV sitcom on Fox called the Family Entertainment Hour with Sam Kinison.
Mm.
And so we had got to where, what we had worked for 6 years to get to.
That sucks.
It just wasn't to be.
Yeah, that sucks. I got to ask you this. I'm sure many people have asked you, how true is it that his last word for what he said, or did he not say anything? I mean, no, we don't know. I mean, really, we don't know.
Well, we when he got hit, he was hit head on by actually
a drunken,
and
yeah,
and the first mm-hmm. one was we could only see the first one because we was on a 2-lane road about 25 miles from Laughlin, Nevada, going there to actually sign a 3-year deal with Don Laughlin. And that was our last casino town. I already had deals in all the other casinos, and that was our last casino town.
Mm-hmm.
And so he never, I mean, that day was just, it was just strange, period. And
yeah, because he had just come back from his honeymoon, right? I believe he just came back from his honeymoon, and he was going to do the gig at Laughlin. And he was going to do the gig at Laughlin, and he got killed by a drunk driver coming the opposite way, hit him head on, right? Yeah. And
so,
what, you were traveling? You were traveling
with
them?
Right
behind
him. I was right behind him in a van with the opening act and the security guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm talking to him, but he obviously can't hear me. I mean, he's in another vehicle. And I'm telling him, slow down, let this guy back in. And so he does. He slows down to probably 15 miles an hour. And at the last second, this guy gets back in line. Well, what we didn't see was his buddy was in another pickup right behind him. And he was passing cars.
Hmm.
So Sam didn't see him until just a fraction of a second before they collided, and he didn't see Sam. And they hit head on. And so I slid the van up as close as I could to his car to get there quickly. And the security guy could not get the door open. And so I jumped out of the van, and I guess just the adrenaline, because I'm not a big guy.
Yeah.
I jerked the door open, and he was sitting still in the driver's seat and leaning over on the armrest, and the steering wheel was gone, but you really couldn't tell that he was hurt except for he had like 4 scratches on his head where he'd hit the windshield.
Mm.
And he was saying, and he started telling me, why? Why now?
Mm.
Why? And I'm like, Sam, just stay still, because he's trying to scoot out of the car. And I said, just stay still. We got help on the way. But I didn't know if we did or not, because we were in a dead area. And so I had his cell phone, my cell phone. I keep trying to call, and we can't we realize we can't keep him in the car. He weighed 280 pounds, and he keeps scooting over. And so we laid him there on the highway in between the door and the car. And the guy that was there, the comedian that was opening for him, he somehow has a different story than I do. And that he was holding Sam when he died. Well, that wasn't true. There wasn't anyone holding him, because I was afraid he had injuries.
Right, right.
And I didn't want to move him. And so while I'm dialing on these 2 phones trying to get 911 to get help, I hear him saying that he doesn't want to die. I don't want to die. But he's not, it isn't like that he's afraid. It's like he's negotiating with someone.
Hmm.
And, you know, it's like, I don't want to die. I don't want to die.
Right.
I don't want to die. And so I looked at him, and his eyes weren't rolled back, and they weren't, you know, getting glazed over anything. And I knew he was hurt, but none of us knew he was dying until he finally went, okay.
Wow.
And that was it. And he was gone.
Wow. Wow. You gave me chills. I didn't know that you were actually there. I mean, it was a long time ago, honey, so forgive me for not remembering.
Oh, that's all right.
Wow. I just got chills. That's crazy. That's crazy. And everything was just going so well, you know, going more than well, I should say. And Laughlin is in the middle of, you got to go in the middle of nowhere to get there, right? I believe, right? my sister loves Laughlin. She goes there all the time. She wants me to go out with her when I get out to Arizona. So, I mean, I've been in Arizona, so I know from here to point A to point B is, like you said, dead. There's nothing. So,
yeah.
Wow. Oh, my God. You gave me chills.
That was our first trip to Laughlin. Neither one of us had ever been there.
Yeah.
And so I've had in down through the years, I've had everything said about me. I put him on that highway to kill him and everything else. I don't worry about it.
Are you kidding me? People blamed you for that? Why?
Well, no, just idiots.
Like,
well,
I don't...
They didn't like me.
I guess the fans were, you know, well, if you didn't push him there, stuff like that.
No, it wasn't fans. It was actually other comedians. And so I go back to how insecure and jealous comedians and preachers are. And
I was
exactly
just saying, are comedians like preachers, I guess, huh?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
And you asked about Sam style, and yes, he did incorporate his preaching style. Amazing thing about it was is that one of Sam's failures in the ministry was that he didn't have any stage presence. And I used to tell him, you know, he thought that preaching was just giving out information. And I used to go, dude, you have to do it in an entertaining way.
Yeah.
You got to keep these people's attention.
Right.
And he
right.
just could not grasp that. But yet when you saw him in comedy, his stage presence is what sold him. But he was doing in comedy, he was doing probably what he was supposed to do. Preaching
right.
just was not his thing. He was doing it because he was named after my dad.
Hmm.
And my dad was a great preacher. And he just felt like, he used to tell me, it was like Julian Lennon, who we became friends with, you know, doing it for dear old dad. And I think that's what he did until he realized it just wasn't going to happen for him.
Right, right. Wow. Now you got to tell me about your book, Brother Sam, The Short Spectacular Life of Sam Kinison. Now, is it true that Howard Stern owned rights and was going to do a movie, and what happened?
He originally bought the movie rights to it, and he had a year's option, and at the end of the year, I did not renew the option. I just didn't think he was going to get the movie done. And so I shopped it myself and with a man named David Permit that has produced a lot of movies.
Yeah.
And we had a deal with Universal. We still have a deal with them. We're still under Universal.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's been in development so long, like so many other projects, that I don't know if it'll ever get made.
Mm.
But the book was a bestseller. It's an easy read. I was very honest in the book. I thought if I'm going to write a book, I'm going to be honest like he was in his comedy. And so I was. I was very honest in the book, and I personally thought it was a great book.
Maybe too honest. I heard his wife sued you for things you said about her in the book.
Well, actually, it wasn't her. It was her sister.
Oh. Wow.
And... she sued me for, let's see, what was it? For invasion of privacy and for slander.
Hmm.
And would not have won, but, when you write a book, the publisher takes insurance out on you. So it wasn't costing me anything, no matter what
right.
happened.
Right.
And so they had a top attorney firm out in L.A., that had represented Ed McMahon and different ones. And so we did all the depositions and everything else. And to go to court, it was going to cost another $150,000. And so they went before an arbitrator, and then they called me on the golf course and said, we settled. And I said, what'd you settle for? And they said, $75,000. But she owed her attorney $73,000.
Oh, God.
So the arbitrator
so she got...
said the magic number was 75, and so they, you know, they just count beans, and it's cheaper to do that
right.
than it was to go to court. And I understood that, but I didn't feel like she ever should have got a dime. And that was it. But the wife never did sue me. She never did sue me. That was false. That was fake news.
Fake news. who would you like to play Sam in the movie?
Well, we had several, and then, you know, it's been so long. The last one was, I can't remember his first name, Gad, and I think he would have really been well. But we had everybody from Meatloaf to...
that'd be good.
Oh, man, I can't even remember all of them. Jack Black
Oh, that's a real good one. I didn't even think of Jack Black. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Matthew McConaughey was supposed to play me, and then he started winning Oscars and stuff like that. And so his price range got way out of our budget. But like I said, you know, there's so many projects with these studios that just die there. And there's a lot goes into it. You have to have the availabilities of everyone from directors to the
right.
actors to everything else. And to put them all together where they're all available at the same time, it's tough.
Yeah,
it's
and
tough.
COVID didn't help.
We have a great script.
Right, COVID
yeah,
didn't
true.
Help.
No, that's true. And Rick
so
Wilkes
was
the writer. He wrote a great script. He was our third writer on it. And so anyway.
Hopefully they revisit it soon so that people get to see it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it'd be great, but we'll see what happens.
Definitely, definitely. So what have you been doing with yourself, especially with the pandemic? What have you been doing during that? Writing, producing? What have you been doing?
Well, after Sam died, I managed a few people, Rodney Dangerfield and different ones. And after managing Sam never wrote a routine. Every night was off the cuff. Whatever was going on, he had this genius ability to make anything funny. And if you really look at his comedy, he was a storyteller. He really wasn't a joke teller. And so after he died, I put out a album that we had recorded that he felt like was dated.
Mm.
And so I actually bought it from him with the agreement, because we didn't know he was going to die, that I would never put it out on a major label or anything. So after he died, I thought, well, that deal's over with. So I won a Grammy with that. I wrote a best-selling book.
Right.
I produced several award-winning documentaries. And then I did the eulogy for Robin Williams' service.
Did you? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Robin.
Wow.
Robin was a very good friend. And so when it was over, I had these people coming up to me and going, man, you should be back in the ministry. And so I thought, you know, maybe I should. And we owned a theater out in Upland, California, 400-seat community theater that we did plays and concerts and different things. And so we decided, I told my wife, I said, you know, we rented it to a church on Sunday mornings. And I said, if they ever leave, I think I would consider starting a church. Well, lo and behold, they end up leaving. I started a church. We did great. And we were there for a year, but it was really too much work because they, you know, we'd have a show on Saturday night. Then we got to break down the set, get it ready for church the next morning, then break that down, get ready for a show at 2 o'clock on Sunday. And after a year, man, it was just too exhausting. So I thought, well, what I'll do is I'll go on the internet for 30 minutes on Sunday and kind of, you know, just to patronize everyone, and they'll eventually drop off and we'll all go back to our own lives.
Yeah.
Well, instead it went the other direction, and now I run over 3,000 live on Sunday morning.
Really?
And and so I don't know how many we run during the week because it's on YouTube and everything, but that's what we do, and we're very successful with it. I'm very happy with it.
And where can people listen to you, Bill?
They can go. The best place to do is just go to the Facebook. It's open to the public of my page, Bill Kennison, or Sherry, my wife's page, Sherry Kennison.
Mm-hmm.
And we do it from 12 to 12:30 Central Time on a Sunday afternoon. We don't send anybody to hell. We're not up there, you know, blasting anybody and telling you how bad we are. It's really more of a motivational program than it is anything. But it's kind of done in a little bit of a preacher style because that's what I am. And then we use scriptures as the basis of what we teach.
Right.
And just in a pinhole, I mean, what we teach is God in you. I don't believe in hell. I don't believe in Jesus coming back. I don't believe there's a big God up in the sky sitting on a throne somewhere. I think he's right inside of us.
Right.
Just like he was in Jesus Christ. And we can do whatever we want to do with our lives. It's up to us.
Right.
It's not up to situations. It's not up to somebody else. It's really up to you. You control your destiny. And that's what we
right.
teach.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I have a saying I've always said, life is easy. The choices we make it hard.
You're right. You're absolutely
right. That's what I've said my whole life.
Yeah. Well, that's
a
good thing.
But, well, that's great. That's exciting that you guys are doing that. And it's every Sunday at 12 Central.
12
and
12:30.
It's on Facebook. 12 to 12:30 Central. On
yep.
Facebook, and you either
yep.
go to Sherry Kinnison or go to Bill Kinnison on Facebook and check it out. They do Facebook Live,
and we don't
I guess.
Ask for any money.
Well,
that'd be the only preacher that has a program doesn't ask for money.
I was just gonna say, oh my God, hallelujah, praise the Lord. He doesn't ask for a preacher that don't ask for money. What the hell is that about? Jesus, oh my goodness. Oh wow, that's great!
Well,
right?
I don't need it, and I didn't want a reputation that I'm doing that
just
to
for
make
the money.
Money
right.
So we have never asked for a penny.
Good for
and
you.
I love
Good
doing
for
it.
You.
I love doing
Good
it.
For you, hon. Good for you. I got to ask you. Oh geez, I lost my train of thought. Oh, God, hold on. I in my head I had something I wanted to ask you. Oh God. I don't write questions down, and we're just talking, hon. That's why. Oh, shoot. It'll come back to me. Oh, this is not what I wanted to ask you. It'll come to me, but I did want to ask you this, too. So do the fans still reach out to you for Sam?
Oh, unbelievable. Believable. He has a cult following every year, and every year, because it's been 29 years.
It's been a long time. That's why my memory is fading on it.
I know it, but every year I think I'm not going to post anything.
Mm.
It's been 29 years. And then there would be literally just thousands of people that will post. And so I'll post something, and just their comments on my own post, I'll run 2,000 or 3,000. I can't even
nice.
Read all of them.
Wow.
And, and these are fans. That
right.
Most of them that, seen him in concert somewhere. I mean, this is a guy that got to a point that we played Giant Stadium in New Jersey to 83,000 people.
Yeah, it's huge.
A stand-up comedian with a microphone.
I didn't know that.
We also, regardless of what Dice Clay says, we were the first ones, or Sam was the first comedian ever to sell out Madison Square Garden.
Really?
And then the very next night, we sold out Nassau Coliseum of over 17,000. And I loved Ted Nugent, and I think the documentary was I Am Sam Kinnison. And he said on there, said Sam was playing the same venues that we were. And we had pyrotechnics, we had ramps, everything else. Sam had a microphone. And was playing in the same arenas that we were for 6 straight years. He got the Billboard Concert of the Year award, and that goes to the ones that have the most sellouts.
Really?
And that was almost every show for Sam. I mean, he just struck a tone. And the funny thing about it was, either you liked Sam or you didn't like him. There really wasn't
right.
Much
there was no
ground.
In between. There was no in between.
No.
You either liked him or you didn't. Right.
Yeah. And obviously he had a lot of people that like him and still love him to this day. It's always surprising to me.
Right. Well, I just remember what I wanted to say. I think it's a shame that, his comedy isn't played or shared as much as it should be today, because times have changed with his content, I guess you would say, his subject matter that he would talk about, So, I mean, I guess we really couldn't come up right now and be Sam Kinnison. Obviously, nobody could be Sam Kinnison. Forget I said that. What I mean is nobody could do the style he did in the content
really
that he
just...
would.
Yeah, to really just put it
exactly the way it was. No one, no comedian can say what Sam said.
Right.
And if Sam was alive today, he would not be able to do that.
Right. That's what I'm saying. It's it's a shame that his comedy can't, you know, be more open and out there because of the content is, you know, basically what I'm saying. Yeah. So, I mean, have you ever considered, like, going through the millions of hours of recordings of his comedy and trying to put stuff up that is not offensive to people? I mean, I wasn't offended. It was comedy. It's comedy. You know what I mean? That's the way. If he's a comedian, whatever he's talking about, it's comedy, okay? You know, it's a joke. But you
know
how people, they get all offended now.
And I'm being totally honest with you. I don't know if I could find enough clean material.
No, I didn't think you could. That's why I said it would take millions of hours to find something clean.
Sam was uncompromising, and he would not compromise in his comedy. And if you want to know who Sam Kinison was, watch his act, because either that was his real feelings or that was his life experiences.
Mm.
Now, the media, you know, made it out different. They made him out to be anti-gay, which was not true. He actually had a large gay following. He was also anti-women, and there wasn't a man that loved and treated women respectfully like Sam did.
Hmm.
But to him, comedy was comedy. Whatever he thought it took to make you laugh, that's what he was going to do. I remember he did his the first HBO special with Rodney Dangerfield on the Young Comedians, and the first routine, or if you want to call it that, that people remembered was Sam making fun of starving children.
Hmm.
And I remember telling him, dude, if you can make them laugh making fun of starving children, then you better be good.
Right.
And
he can make them laugh at anything.
He can make anything funny.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I loved when he did the song for Rodney Dangerfield, that when he got behind the piano. Oh God, that was so funny. He started out real soft and then.
Yeah, that's right. He wanted his records back. Wanted my records back. Yeah, that was what he called his love story.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that was hysterical.
Or love
that
song,
was hysterical.
Yep.
Yeah. And then I remember on Saturday Night Live when he was playing the guitar with the band and everything. Yeah, it was a long time ago. It feels like it was so long ago to me anyway. I mean, you know, you're family, so for you, it probably feels like yesterday to you. I mean, I don't know. You know?
Pretty much.
Yeah, so.
I had people tell me that I never accepted Sam's death because of you know, how I react and stuff. And I go, you know what, you may be right, because I still deal with him every day.
Right.
I'm the executor of his estate, and I still do business for Sam every day. So I don't know.
Yeah,
you're
carrying on the brand, you know?
Yeah.
Somebody's got to do it.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to. Now your other siblings, are they involved or no? It's just you.
Well, our youngest brother, Kevin, was murdered in 1988.
Oh, God, I'm sorry.
Was shot in the back of the head in a house burglary.
Oh,
and
God.
Our brother Richard, which was really the star of our family. It wasn't Sam, it was Richard. He was born blind and severely mentally handicapped. And at the age of 13, he said an angel appeared to him and told him he could heal himself. And so he laid hands on his head. No one was there on his eyes. And he could see for the first time.
No
way. And he
was
2 years older than me. And we ended up graduating from high school together. And he ended up being the best evangelist I had ever seen in my life. And believe me, I've seen them all and know just about all of them. He was absolutely the best. His name was Richard Kinison. And that was the real, when he died at his funeral, I spoke and I told the people, I said, you know, people consider Sam to be in the top five stand-up comedians of all time, but the real real star of our family was Richard, and he was.
Hmm.
So I had a great family, and he died 8 years ago with melanoma cancer.
Oh, I'm sorry. But you definitely have that.
Standing, babe.
Well, like you said, you definitely had an amazing family, an amazing life. I mean, God, when Sam's when he blew up, I mean, you were there. You're still there. You're still there taking care of everything. And but what an experience that must have been, especially like you said, he was the rock stars comedian and great times. The '80s were a great time, and what a fabulous time you guys must have had during that time. And I, that's why I had to ask if it was true, if he said what he said, because I could see him saying it. Why now? You know, everything is happening for me. Why now? You know?
I think he had a premonition that something was going to happen to him, only from the way he acted and things he said in the last few weeks.
Hmm.
And you had mentioned that he reached all his goals. I remember I was doing this movie deal with New Line, and they wanted to meet Sam, make sure he's able to work and stuff. And so we had this big meeting with conference and the executives from New Line. And right in the middle of it, Sam gets up and goes, "Well, it sounds good to me. And if you work it out with my brother, then I guess we'll be in business." And leaves.
Hmm.
And so they're all like, "Bill, you know, is everything all right?"
Hmm.
And I was like, "Oh, yeah. He's you know, we've been going at it, tired and stuff." And so when I got out of the meeting, I called him and I said, "Brother, what's going on?"
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Well, while I was sitting there, I was thinking that I had attained every goal that I set out to do, and I've got to set some new goals."
Hmm.
And what people didn't know is that Sam got killed in April. He had planned on going back in the ministry in May.
Hmm.
And obviously didn't quite make it, but he was going to go back to preaching. And he thought with what he knew and what he had learned of how to move people and everything else, and I have no doubt he'd have been extremely successful. And that was that's what he was going to do, but didn't quite make it.
Yeah, because he had got his persona now, so he could have gone back.
Yep.
Like you said, you need that personality or a showman to some degree, you know.
Yep.
And he got that. So you think that was? It's so funny you say that, because when I was younger, I used to say, "God, I'm going to remain a failure the rest of my life, because once you reach all your goals, God takes you." So I don't want to succeed. I remember saying that in my 20s. I'm like, I don't want to succeed, because when you succeed, God takes you, you know? Oh, my God. That's
well, I guess I'm quite a failure then, because I'm still here.
Well, God bless you. God bless us all, right? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I have to ask your opinion about these preachers these days, or these evangelists. What do you think of them, since we're talking about it?
Well, I knew most of them. I mean, I knew Jimmy Swaggart. He tried to talk my brother Richard and I into joining the Assembly of God,
mm-hmm.
of which we were doing just fine not being with any organization, so we passed mm-hmm. that up. I knew Jim and Tammy Baker when mm-hmm. they were doing the puppet show for Pat Robertson
mm-hmm.
on his television show.
Are they both Joel dead now? Osteen. I know Tammy's dead. Is
no,
Tammy
no, Jim. Jim is Jim is actually selling supplies on TV for the end of the world.
Oh, my God.
And so,
the people are buying it, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure they are. Well, look at Jimmy Swagger, man. Look at all he's going through, and he's still as big as he's ever been.
Mm.
And I knew Jimmy Swaggart.
Hmm.
I remember when I knew Jimmy when he used to run around a tent for $5 offerings.
Hmm.
That changed.
Hmm. Oh,
and
God.
So, yeah, I knew these guys. And like I said, Joel Osteen, who I think, and you know, I like Joel, but a lot of a lot of hardcore Christians don't care for him. And I preach for his dad. I knew him when he was 12 years old, and his dad was very straight laced, so much so that he told me that I dressed too flashy when I was preaching.
Hmm.
And I'm sure that if his dad was alive and saw Joel, I don't think he'd be too excited.
Hmm.
But yeah, I know most of them, and somehow, you know, they all say that Jesus is going to come back. Well, you know, if Jesus did, I don't think that he's really into mega churches
hmm.
and TV televangelist. I mean, this is a guy that they wanted to build tabernacles for him, and he said no. This is the same guy that if he healed someone would tell him, don't tell anybody that I did this. And so it's hard for me to buy the mega church and televangelist thing with all the emphasis on the money like they do. It's hard for me to really accept that.
Yeah, but there's so many people who believe and follow it and would give their last dime. It just amazes me.
Yeah.
It amazes me.
The
spell, I guess. I don't know. I guess everybody's looking for hope, I guess. And I guess there's a price to pay for it, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't
right.
know. I don't
you know
what
think,
it is.
I think they're just as responsible as these guys that's up there taking their money. Because
right.
they're doing it.
Right. Willingly
keep,
and freely.
They keep giving it and getting nothing back. And
right.
They keep doing it, so... I think they're just as responsible.
Yeah, I know. I know. I wonder sometimes if there's something wrong with them a little bit, but that's just me saying that. I mean, I don't mean anything. I don't mean to be rude at all, but it's just I don't know. I'm not one who's swayed by advertising. Like if I see something, I don't run out and buy it because I just saw it or something like that. I don't know. I guess I'm just more of a free will thinker or whatever. And, you know, I don't know.
Well,
I don't know. I'm not the type of person
that
have somebody tell me what to do, I guess. I don't know.
You have to understand that we're raised ignorant. And I don't mean that in a intellectual way, but you know, let's face it, I mean, you have your major organizations, Assembly of God, Church of God, and all of them, and they all have the same statement of belief that was written in the 1800s. Not
mm-hmm.
one word of their statement of belief has ever changed. Yet look how we progressed in every part of the world.
Yeah.
And so I often put it like this. How were we able to keep slaves in our country as long as we did? We refused to let them learn because knowledge is power,
right.
and we kept them in fear.
Right.
Well, what's the difference with that and what churches do? You know, they may
right.
be afraid not to be there, that God's going
right.
to be mad at you. So anyway, that's
yeah,
just
I
a
know.
Little bit of how radical I am.
Yeah, no, I like you because you're not like them. you're a good one. You're a cool preacher. I like that. You know, you're not trying to get anything out of anybody. You're just there to
nope.
be there. You're there to be there for
right.
them. You know, which is
That's
great.
It. Most of them
want something. And what it is your money. They want your mind and your money. You know.
Yeah.
Oh, what do you think of Scientology? Since we're talking about that.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know a lot about Scientology, but from what I've read and what I've seen and stuff, they seem to be pretty controlling.
Yeah, it seems
and,
like another cult to me. I don't know. They all seem
yeah,
like cults.
Yeah, that's
to
what
me.
It seems like to me. But
but
they as far as I think they're deceptive, but they're really good at it because they seem to get stars and stuff to buy into it somehow, which I've never understood.
I know. I don't get it. I don't know. I'm very confused by a lot of things these days. I really am. I am. I'm speechless at half of the things going on. You know, I just really
yep.
am. But oh my goodness. Well, you got to try and dig through. Millions of are you planning on doing another book or anything or any,
actually I am getting ready to write another book.
Oh good. What
and,
is it?
It's gonna be actually on my family and on show business, you know, of how we evolved.
Nice.
Because we started out living in the projects in Peoria, Illinois, the same projects that Richard Pryor
Really?
Mm. Yeah, and Richard, who ended up being a very close friend, but Richard, his act was pretty much what his life was like in the projects.
Yeah.
And I remember I told him one time, I said, dude, I don't want to hear that crap. And he goes, you don't know, brother. I said, yeah, well, we lived in the same projects. And he was like, you know, blankety blank, you didn't. I go, yeah, we did. He goes, what was your address? I said, 250 East Washington Street. So what was your unit? I said, 56. I said, I even know the church you attended. And I know Pastor Hightower that was your pastor. And so, man, he was like, damn, man.
Got me.
You do know. And
right,
I said, well,
right.
I'm telling you. And so, you know, consider that, you know, we started out in life like that and ended up with, you know, Sam being one of the greatest comedians ever, my brother Richard being the greatest evangelist I've ever seen. I've done very well as a preacher. I mean, when Sam hit, he went and played arenas that I had played. I'd held crusades in.
Really?
I remember I'd walk in and the union crew members would be there and they'd be like, oh, how you doing, Reverend Kennison? I go, well, it's a little different message this time than the last time I was here. And so I was very successful. So my dad must have taught us, you know, some principles that worked in our lives because we all ended up being very successful.
Well, that's great. That's great. I mean, really, you guys, like you said, you came from nothing and look where you are and look where you've been, and where you are. It's just amazing. And you sound so happy, Bill. You sound so happy and I'm happy
for
you.
Well, thank you.
Yes,
thank
and
you.
I'm so glad you joined me tonight because I was dying to talk to you, and I wish that it wasn't so long ago because my memory is just not what it used to be. My goodness, I can't remember. And, I mean, during the time when Sam was big, I was outperforming myself. I wasn't big on TV at the time. So if I happened to catch him on Saturday Night Live or Johnny Carson or something, I mean, that was late at night. So not late, but, you know, at the time,
well,
I was probably just,
was.
I was just coming in or something and got to just catch that brief moment. And of course, MTV, I was addicted to MTV. So when his songs came out, I saw them and everything. But I never really got to actually see a full performance of his set. You know what I'm saying? I never got to see Sam's full set.
No,
I didn't know he sold out Giant Stadium. That's, like you said, that's 80,000 people. I'm right next to Giant Stadium. I know I've been there for concerts, and it's huge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, he was, he had a strong fan base and, they loved him.
Let me ask you this. This is a stupid question. They say a lot of comedians, have some form of possible depression, you know, and they, or they're running away from something. Was that Sam to any degree?
Running
away
that,
from feelings. Don't get not something. Feelings. Running away from feelings.
Well, I'll use Robin as a good example.
Yeah,
Robin,
that's what I'm thinking too. He always comes to mind.
When Robin died, I was shocked, but I wasn't surprised.
Mm.
And the reason was is that you cannot always be on.
Right.
Jim Carrey is like that. He's also another good friend. You cannot always be on. And so when you're not on, you go as deep as you was high.
Right.
Sam, he had such a rough time before he got into comedy that I think he, you know, adjusted well. And so when he made it, he really didn't change. He was still the same guy and wasn't going to change. And so I think in that sense, we all battle demons.
Right.
You know, we all battle demons inside.
Yes, we do.
And I'm sure Sam, you know, did. And, you know, and he had an addictive personality. That's why he partied so hard as he did until the last year and a half of his life, is that that was his personality. He couldn't do anything in moderation. It was either all in or it wasn't going to happen.
Well, it's also the entertainment lifestyle.
Right.
It was also the entertainment lifestyle at the time too. It was, you know, sex, drugs, rock and roll, you know.
Yep.
So I mean, it was good times, good times, good times. That's
yeah, it
for
was.
Sure.
Oh, it was fun. Time.
I got to ask a really crazy question now. This just came to me too. Now, you know, like you said earlier, that his wife cheated on him, and you know, changed his life. So, I mean, he went on and became this famous comedian. She must be kicking herself, huh? When that all happened, did she try to get back with him or what?
I don't really. We played. She was from Ohio, and we played Dayton, and she actually came to the show. I had to pick her up actually, and bring her to the show. And I'm sure those two are ahead because, you know, she'd experienced a lot of hard times with him, and now here he is, a multimillionaire, and
yep,
and she'd not. And
should've
so I'm
stuck
sure
it
those
out.
Thoughts went through her head, but it changed. It changed Sam. I don't think Sam ever trusted women after that because this gal was supposed to be, you know, really holy and a gospel singer and all that. And that just destroyed him. And so I don't think he ever trusted women in a relationship again after that.
Mm. Well, I think he married two more times after that, no?
Yep. Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, Malika was his third wife, and she was so moved by his death that she didn't come to his funeral service.
Do you mean that sarcastically, or are you being no?
Yes, I do.
Okay, thank you. I thought so.
You just turned me to sarcasm.
I just wanted to be sure. I didn't want because I don't want to say. Something that is not true, you know. So, yeah, she was so well. They were only married a week, if that.
Yeah, but they've been together 7 years.
Mm.
But anyway, that was you know that's her choice, and you know, and that's what I told her when you know, we had the service in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I told her I had arranged for all of us to fly on the plane that Sam would be on, and she said I'm not going. And so I didn't ask her why, anything else. I just went, oh, that's up to you. And so we went and had church.
Mm. And why Tulsa, Oklahoma? What's the reason behind that?
That's where all our family was and is. They're all buried there.
Because you're originally from Washington. I think you're originally from Washington, aren't you?
He was born in a little place called Wapato, Washington, just outside Yakima.
Yeah,
but we left there. My dad got kicked out of the Church of God, and we left there when Sam literally was probably a month old. And came to Peoria, Illinois.
Oh, okay. That makes sense then. And then everybody wound up in Arkansas.
My mother, when my father died, my mother remarried, and her husband pastored a great church in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And
Oklahoma.
That's where she remained. Yeah, that's where she remained until she died. And so all of my family is buried there. My brothers, my father, my stepfather, even my father-in-law is buried there. And so that's why it was Tulsa.
Now, I've got to ask you about his, should I say the word, illegitimate daughter, or no, is that not the proper word to say, that he, a child he fathered that you did a DNA test for? Is she still in the picture your life?
Yeah, no, she's not in my life. I actually did a DNA for her. Sam had a friend named Carl LeBeau, and they used to have, you know, back in the 80s and early 90s, you know, everybody was into these sex scenes, and so then they were, you know, and they were into that, and they would switch women and everything.
And
so I asked them one time, was in New Orleans, I said, what are you going to do if one of these women get pregnant? And they both said, well, we decided that if that happens, then we'll raise it, you know, as our own. And so, well, it happened. But I didn't know
that she was Sam's daughter until I did the DNA test when she was 16. And the way she found out is Carla Bow had went on the Howard Stern show. And on the Howard Stern show, he announced that this young lady was not his daughter, but was Sam's. And that's how that's how the girl found out.
Oh,
and
wow.
I found that to be just about unforgivable. But I reached out to her, and we talked, you know, quite a bit, and, you know, got to know each other. And then
this
Carl.
This is after Sam passed, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then Carl, which never paid a penny of child support, decided that when she was 18 to go back to court and to tell him that he just found out that that it wasn't his daughter, but he, you know, it obviously had, you know, court because he had been to court 12 years before that and knew that that was Sam. And so after that, I made one phone call to her, and she didn't seem like she really wanted to talk to me. And so I just told her, I said, you know, if you ever want to meet your other side of the family, I've got a daughter your age, it's your cousin, and everything, I'll pay for you to come out and everything. But she is, and she's never took me up on the offer.
Hmm. And now that would have been Sam's only child then.
Well,
no?
That we know of.
That we know of. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, that could be true, right? That could be true.
That,
oh, my goodness.
It could be, I guess. There was a lot of partying going on in those
days. Yeah. It was great times. Great. I missed those. The 80s were fabulous. Oh, my God. I missed the 80s so much. I miss the 80s and back. 80s and going back were the best of times for me. I don't know about
you.
Well,
you know, that was... To me, the 60s, 70s, 80s, that was the best times there were.
Yeah.
But maybe it's just our generation. But I thought it was just the best times that you could live in.
I thought so. I still think so. I still think so.
I have to agree with you.
Yeah.
And just to set the record clear, I wasn't into the parties. I didn't drink, even though I went to a rehab for 5 months because I took a drug hit for Sam at the airport, and so they sent me to rehab.
Oh, God.
For 5 months.
Oh, my goodness. You're a good brother. A good brother.
Well, that was my brother, and I was there to take care of him. But
yeah.
But it was an interesting experience. I got to be honest with you.
Well, speaking of probation, not to jump around, but I believe the person that hit Sam's car only got probation. Is that correct?
Yeah, he was only 17, and there's five criteria. They charged him with vehicular manslaughter, but as a minor, there's five criteria you have to meet. To be tried as an adult, and I'm going to be very honest with you. I told the state's attorney that I didn't want him to go to jail. He was 17. He didn't get up that morning to go out to, you know, to make up his mind he's going to kill somebody.
Mm.
He was just stupid. And Sam drove a lot of times drunk, and it very well could have been the other way around.
Mm.
You know, except for the grace of God. And so I didn't want him to go to jail. What bothered me was that he had absolutely no remorse.
Mm.
He was a senior in high school, and he wanted to put in the yearbook that he killed Sam Kennison.
Are you kidding
me?
And
from what I understand from his aunt, I met his aunt one day. I tried to find him, and I finally gave up just to sit down and talk to him and tell him, you know, man, you're a kid. You know, you couldn't... You can't let this destroy your life.
Right.
I was never able to get a hold of him, but according to his aunt, he had a couple of nervous breakdowns, can't hold a job, everything else. So he's paying in his own way, I guess.
I guess, yeah. Wow. Well, I'm sure he got, I'm sure the fans found out who he was and hunted him down. And, you know, I'm sure it wasn't pleasant for him, I'm sure, to that degree, even though he had no remorse. I mean, he was a kid, but still, Jesus Christ, just killed somebody. And not just somebody, you killed a celebrity. And, you know, to have no remorse, I mean, my God. I don't get people. I don't get it.
In his, when they getting ready to sentence him, I was down at the counselor's table, and the judge asked me if I'd like to say anything, and I said, yeah. And so I had the attorneys move away, and it was just he and I looking at each other. And I told him several things, not long, but just a few things. But one thing I told him was, I said, you know, we're both going to experience things in our life that we don't think is good.
Right.
We're both going to have times that we feel are tragic. Between you and me is, the first thought that's going to come into your mind is this karma for me being responsible for someone's death.
Right.
And you know, I really, you know, just was trying to get to him to let him know, man, you know, this isn't just a thing. But can you imagine if you're responsible for somebody's death and for almost 30 years, his name still comes up? And every time it comes up, you got a flashback to that.
Right, right.
Hell, I'd have had nervous breakdowns.
Yeah, exactly.
It would have been me.
Yeah.
And so
exactly.
And
do you have any kids, Bill? Bill, do you have kids?
Yes. I've got a beautiful daughter, and I've got two fantastic grandchildren. That's why we moved to San Antonio and left L.A.
to be closer,
because they're here.
Nice. And
is your
daughter into preaching as well, or no? Totally different.
No, she was actually in the entertainment business. She did a couple movies. She was on soap opera, Port Charles, I think it was.
Oh.
And she had a band for quite a while, and then she met a fantastic guy and decided she wanted to settle down. He got a job offer here in San Antonio. So they moved here 3 years ago. And then when COVID hit, we just had, by a miracle, sold our businesses in California.
Mm-hmm.
And so my wife goes, well, if we're going to be quarantined, we might as well move to San Antonio and be quarantined with our family.
Right.
And so that's what we did. And we have never regretted it. We've been here since August.
Mm. The reason I ask if you had kids is because you sound like you'd be a great dad. You sound really, really
cool.
Well,
thank you.
You sound
cool. She says I am, but I'm her dad. She has to tell me that.
No, it's funny. You didn't know. I had an embarrassing moment one time. My niece, it was her eighth grade graduation, and she was introducing the family to her friends. And she goes, oh, this is my Aunt JoJo. She's the cool aunt. I started crying. Something cool, right? I started crying. I said, I never thought somebody would be a cool aunt, you know?
Well, I'd love to have a sister or an aunt like you, because you were cool.
Oh, thank you.
I've enjoyed
talking
to
you. Yeah, absolutely, Bill. It really was a pleasure, and I'm so glad we got to meet, and not in person, but we got to chat, and, you know, I wish all the best for you. You don't need any wishing. You're doing fabulous. You're doing great. I'm so happy for you.
Well, thank you. Thank you,
and
I wish you the best.
Oh, thank you. I could sure use some help. I could use a prayer or two, that's for sure.
Well, I'll put you on my prayer list.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I could use all the help I could get these days, that's for sure. You know, it's like you said, you can't be on all the time. And it's like, I love doing the show. It makes me feel so good, but it kills me to do it. It's been hard to do. I was in a car accident about 2 years ago, and it just, the pain is just, I can't live with the pain anymore. And it's like, oh, I live to do the show because it makes me so happy to do it. And, you know, you have to be on to do it. You know, I mean, I'm being myself,
yeah.
But, you know, you still have to be in that mood to do it. And
yeah,
it's been tough. It's been tough. I'm not going to lie. So, you know, I'm kind of, taking a little break a little bit here and there. I'm not booking as many shows as I used to do, so I got to do something, right? I got to do something to help myself. So, but
yep.
You know, but that's what I
Nothing
I live for.
Doing what you love,
right?
Yep.
That's what I. But
I
live for
understand.
Doing it, and it's so hard to do it.
Yep.
So it's I'm in a struggle. You know, I'm in a struggle. So,
yep.
But it is what it is, I guess, as they say.
Well, you're a strong woman.
Yeah, I know. How much more can one woman take, though, you know?
Yeah.
Well, such is life. Such is life. Such is life. But, well, Mr. Kinnison, again, what a pleasure. And I definitely think I'm going to tune in this Sunday to hear you guys. So is it you and Sherry both doing the show, or is it mainly
no,
you?
No, I just do it, but she's behind the cameras.
So what is your sermon
this
Sunday? Do you have anything planned yet, or do you just...
Yeah. I'm going to be teaching on reprogramming your thinking.
Oh.
How to reprogram your thinking.
No, we got to get a lot of people into that. I think I need to hear that. Reprogram my thinking, too, as to getting out of this funk I'm in.
Well, then I think this might be the time.
Definitely.
And I won't ask you for any money. I'll do it for free.
Aw, you're too good. You really are. You know, because you do it because you love it. You're not doing it because you want something. You know, you're doing it because you
love it.
Right.
I really do. I look forward to it every week.
Me too. Same thing here. I do it because I enjoy it. I'm not doing it to make money. I'm not doing it for stardom, celebrity, whatever. I just do it because I enjoy it. It makes me happy. And, you know, it's my way of staying in the entertainment business, because I was a singer myself back in the day. Like I said, when Sam was on top, I was out performing myself, so that's why I never got to see much. But, you know, I used to be a singer myself, and I lost my singing voice to 9/11. And one day I said, you know what, I think I'm going to do this thing, this radio show, and just hang out with some people and talk and get some really great guests on for people to listen. And it's just been going wonderful. I think this might be my 2 or 3 year anniversary this summer.
Whoa.
And
Yeah,
so it's been a lot of fun. It's a lot of hard work, but it's a lot of fun, and I enjoy it immensely. Like I said, it's my way of staying in the industry. So, you know, and I enjoy meeting people like you. I mean, how else would I have ever met you? I would have never met you otherwise. So, and I feel blessed to have met you today.
Well, thank you, and I've really enjoyed being on here.
Thank you.
But one thing, it's not the same old questions that I usually get, and I really enjoyed that. It was refreshing.
Yeah, no, that's why I didn't even want to ask you about the incident at the scene of the accident. But I just, when I had heard about, you know, supposedly him saying what he said, I didn't know if there was any real validation in that, and you were actually there, so yeah. And I got chills from it. Yeah. Well, he it was time. It was his time, I guess.
No, I really
I do
believe that.
Yeah, it may not have seemed like it was to everybody else, but to him, he knew, I guess, it was his time. And again, you said, you know, you seemed like the last couple weeks to the incident that he kind of might have had like a sense of something going on. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yep.
But yeah, no, I don't ask the same stupid questions that people ask. We're just hanging out and having a good time. That's it. And I don't write any questions down. I'm just going off the top of my head, which is why I didn't have much to say, because it was 30 years ago. So I'm my mind is not the same. That's for sure. That's for sure.
Well,
but,
none of us are.
Oh, Bill, thank you so much. It was great talking to you. I appreciate it so much. Again, a pleasure to speak with you, and I had a great time. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, and I really, really enjoyed it. I really did.
Yeah.
And I wish you well and your program well.
Oh, thank you. And if the book, if you get that movie going, let me know. We'll come back on, and we'll talk about the release of the movie and even your new book, if you'd like.
All right, we'll do that.
Excellent.
I'll keep you in my files.
Same thing here. Thank you so much. Everybody, Bill Kinnison, thank you so much, Bill. Check out Bill and Sherry on Facebook. Go to Bill Kinnison, K-I-N-I-S-O-N, or Sherry Kinnison, S-H-E-R-R-Y Kinnison, on Facebook on Sundays between 12 and 12:30 Central Time. And Bill's going to do a sermon for you. And I don't even want to call it a sermon. I'm going to call it a life lesson and some advice. And that's it. And he doesn't want anything from you. So how cool is that? He's giving. He's giving. He's not taking. He's giving.
Well, I've received a lot in my life. So sometimes you got to give back.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, thank you again, everybody. Bill Kinnison.
Well,
thank you so much. Take care, honey. It was great talking to you, and all the best, and God bless you and your family, and I wish you all well.
Thank you, honey.
Take care. Bye-bye. Thank you, Bill. Oh, boy. I'm telling you, yeah, because, I mean, for those of you who listen to the show, I know you know. I mean, I'm no Barbara Walters here. I don't want to make anybody cry. I don't want to ask stupid questions, but sometimes they are stupid questions. And I don't write questions down. I really don't. Based on the conversation, that's how the conversation flows. That's what I'm going to add. That's what we're going to talk about. Whatever you're talking about is we're bouncing off of each other, just like a regular conversation. We're just hanging out. So pardon me. I do have to read this. Hold on one second, guys. Oh, God. Hold on. Yeah, I'm in a funk, guys. I'm sorry. I'm trying my best to get out of it. Where is it? Who we got here? I want to say thanks to our sponsors. I haven't mentioned them in a while. And I also have the new sponsors. They're up. Our new sponsors are up on our site now. We finally got that information. So hold on one second. I'm looking for them. I can't. Bear with me, guys. I'm sorry. Well, I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Bill. I did. It was great to talk to him. Sorry you're hearing papers rustle. I can't find my advertisers. But anyway, I'll go off the top of my head. The Hive Bar and Bistro in the Hive Bar in Garfield, New Jersey. Syntec Productions in Oka Harbor, New Jersey. For Pete's sake, givecancerabreak.org. I don't have it. I'm so sorry. Oh, I don't even have the list of the new sizes. Where the heck is that? Oh, man. I'm a mess here. I don't know. Well, thank you to all our advertisers. I can't find it. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, our new advertisers are up. We've got Michael's Arts and Crafts. The Michael's. FedEx, another one. Gamefly. Just go to the website. How's that? www.applauseradioshow.com. You can listen back to this show at applauseradioshow.com, blogtalkradio.com, iheartradio.com. Working on getting us out to everywhere. I just don't have the time to do it. That's that. And what else? Oh, our YouTube channel I've been working on for a while. Again, no time. You know what? I have the time. My body's exhausted. I can't. I just can't do it. I'm trying. I just can't do it. I do try, and it's just like my body just won't let me do it. So what do we have coming up? We've got, like I said earlier, I'm going to start doing a few less shows for a little while. What do we got? Oh, God, I'm going to read you my procedure. It's on my calendar. that's the 26th. Oh, on the 27th, we got Sean Mayotte at 8 p.m., he's got a new book out. For those of you who don't know, Sean was on the show before. He's a former porn star, and he has had an amazing life himself. And his book, I don't remember the name of the first book. I think it was the something living with a narcissist, something about a narcissist. Anyway, he's got a new book out too now, so we're going to talk to him about his new book. And I hope you guys enjoyed the show on Sunday with John Bell. That was a great conversation. I enjoyed speaking to him. Rick Sudi Karatash, that was great. I had a good time with him. And we had a pretty good month. July, like I said, I'm planning on taking some time off. So, but, yeah, we're not going to have many shows in July, folks. We might have four or five. That's it. I need to get some rest. The body says I need some rest. So what do we want to close with tonight? Let's see. I was looking at this. I liked it. I liked it. Let's do Call Me Anytime. Then we're going to close with Call Me Anytime. It's Greg DiPaolo. He was on. When was Greg on? Oh, was he on this month? Yeah. Yeah, it was the 11th. Greg was on the 11th. He's the bassist for The Outsiders. Time Won't Let Me. And he released, after all these years in the music industry, playing for other, playing with other bands. He was actually in a Beatlemania group, and he finally put out his own single, his first single. So this is Call Me Anytime by Greg DiPaolo. Enjoy. Thank you again, everybody, for listening. Thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to Bill Kinnison for joining me. It was a pleasure. And you guys all have a good one. Have a great weekend. It's Wednesday, and we will see you on Sunday, the 27th, with Sean Mayotte at 8 p.m. Good night, everybody. Call me anytime. Greg DiPaolo.
Together, girl, so